Happy New Year, everybody! Grab a grail, grab a goat, because it is time for the Witches Movie Coven. Yes, indeed. And this week on the Witches Movie Coven, we are going to the classic Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I am Patty Negri. I am one of your hosts. You might know me from Ghost Adventures or The Witching Hour or a whole bunch of YouTubes here and there. And this is my co-host, Jason Mankey, right here. I'll just hand it on to you because that's what we've been doing.
Oh, I am Jason Mankey. I've written a lot of books, and also tomorrow's my birthday. So I'm going to be talking about myself a lot tonight. I apologize in advance.
Heather.
Hi, I'm Heather Green, and I am the author of Lights, Camera, Witchcraft, The Definitive Guide to All Things Witches and American Movies. I'm also a journalist and a editor at Llewellyn Worldwide.
Courtney!
That's me. I'm Courtney Buckley. I am Ghostbait on Scared and Alone, Salem Witch, and excited to celebrate Jason's birthday. Happy birthday.
Yay, happy birthday, Jason. And King Richard Leal.
That would be correct. I'm actually Lord Reverend Richard Leal-Elard. Of course, I paid $50 for the Lord part, and I paid $50 for the Reverend part. So I am the good Lord Reverend Richard Leal-Elard, and I am known as the Gentleman Psychic. I am on Scared Alone and Ghost Adventures and all kinds of other things that might be not family oriented. But you can find me. You can find me anywhere. I'm so easy to find.
And we're going there early. Okay. Yeah. Now, I don't know if there is anybody on the planet who has not seen Monty Python. I grew up with Monty Python and the Holy Grail. But just in case there is somebody out there, Richard Leal, do you have an unbiased recap?
I do have an unbiased recap. It is, how do I even begin? A parody of the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur. It's a series of vignettes from all of the knights. I think all of the knights. I wasn't counting, but I think it's of the knights. They go through on their quest to find, of course, the Holy Grail, and they're going through what later becomes England, and they encounter, I mean, there's a lot of quotable things. It's really hard to say, because if I actually full on say, I might step on some of Courtney's quotes, so I'm not going to do that. It's King Arthur, the Knights of the Round Table. They don't ride horses. They use coconuts. And they encounter people that need like the Black Knight, and they slice off arms and legs and limbs, and I'm not going to tell you what they say because that's a Courtney thing.
And I have then it all.
There's a point where they go into a village and someone has been accused of witchcraft, and they're going to burn her because she looks like a witch. This is not Salem, by the way, Courtney Buckley.
Nope.
There's all, I don't even know how to begin. If you haven't seen it, the only thing that I can say is that it's a parody of King Arthur's court. That's all that I can say.
It doesn't really have a plot. Like, you're in a terrible situation. It doesn't really have a plot.
You're exactly right. And I, all day long, you have no idea how I was like, what am I going to even say about it? There's no plot. What am I going to say?
Part of the problem is, Richard Leal, is that you're trying to avoid upstaging Courtney with her and with her quotes. And unfortunately, this movie is most known for its quotes and is most well described through its quotes with each vignette. So you're doing a really you have a really tough job this week.
That's all I'm going to say is it's a parody of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. That's it. Go watch it for yourself. Or don't. I don't care.
The quest for the grail. It's a quest for the grail. Isn't Light Bull a quest for the grail? All right. I don't know if this is in your book or not, Miss Heather. You have our academic official kind of Heatherishness.
Let me move these coconuts out of the way so I can just get my little notes that I took. This is not actually, and that's the wrong notes. They're over here. It is not in my book. It's a British movie, clearly made and released in 1975 jointly in the UK and here. And this is the first movie that the Monty Python crew did after their somewhat successful bizarre, what is it, flying circus that they did. And it was a low budget. And when they first proposed it, apparently the British movie industry turned it down. They couldn't get funding. So who did they get funding to? I bet Jason knows.
Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, baby.
Yes, and a number of other record industry, music industry folks put a ton of money into it. A ton of money, of course, was not a ton of money by movie standards, but it was enough to make the film. Although a lot of stuff was revamped because they didn't have budgets for horses, for example. That's how the coconuts became a part of it. And a lot of other things like the ending and all a lot of dreams they had, they couldn't do because they didn't have the big budget. They, for example, every castle is the same castle. If you're watching it, every castle is filmed at the exact same castle. Apparently that was because that's all the only place they were allowed to film. The only castle. So they all were the same castle. So of course, so I said Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd funded it. That's a really neat part. In fact, the follow-up, Life of Brian, they also couldn't get funding. And it was, I believe, funded by George Harrison. So
that is correct. You know,
yep. So that's a lot of the fun stuff. The movie has lasted. It's a bizarre, bizarre comedy. It's very British comedy. It's very Monty Python. You have to like this sense of humor. It's smart. It's intelligent. It's meant to poke fun and to prod everyone. And it does a lot of that. There were some interesting things, scenes they cut, which would have dated the film a little bit more. They would have been very current in 1975 and today wouldn't have worked as well. But mostly the film is timeless in a weird kind of way. And it's actually as a Broadway musical now. We have Spamalot on going on the stage. I have not seen it. I've actually avoided it. And I think those are some of the big things. Just to name the people in it, Eric Idle, Michael Palin, Graham Chapman, John Cleese, and then the directors, Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones. And you might know that Terry Gilliam went on to do Brazil, if you've seen that. The Fisher King, 12 Monkeys, those are some more prominent films you might know of.
Time Bandits.
Which what?
Time Bandits.
Time Bandits. Oh, yeah, Time Bandits.
Time Bandits.
That is one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Terry Jones did Life of Brian and The Meaning of Life, the other two Monty Python films that you might have heard of. And I won't tell you my opinions about any of them right now. But that's just a little piece. There were a lot of, I know the film industry in Britain did do some censorship when it came out. They wanted them to cut some language down, cut some suggestive stuff to make sure it could be available to children. But mostly and I actually saw a scene this time watching it that I hadn't seen before, which I thought was interesting, but that's for another discussion. But yeah, so it's become a classic. It will not go away. It won't. And that's so apropos to Monty Python. It just sits there laughing.
Yeah.
So
all I can say is thank goodness they did not have enough money for horses.
It gets me every time they do the coconuts. Like I laugh and every time.
They each it's have their so own funny. Little look about it, and put it up.
And we won't quote say anything about swallows while we're doing this, because we would be upstaging Courtney once again.
I'm trying to see if I wrote the word swallows down. I don't think I did, but I. Do you want me to just do my quotes now so that
just
we can talk about
now,
it?
Just give it to you.
Full disclosure, okay? I had never seen this movie. I had seen pieces of it. Hold on. I had seen pieces of it. I knew I was going to love it. I knew it was my cup of tea. I just had never sat down and watched the whole thing. It's an hour and a half long. And I was telling you guys before we came on, but I'll tell everyone else. I watched it for 2 hours and only got halfway through because I was so busy typing that I essentially realized I was writing the whole script out. So I only have quotes for the first half of the movie because that's as far as I got. Also, because I was laughing so hard, I was missing more quotes. So I had to keep pausing and laughing and whatever. The whole coconuts bit in the beginning, I was crying. And then when he said, "Are you suggesting coconuts migrate?" And then led into the whole swallows screaming. I couldn't even, I was like, I had to delete all that. I literally wrote the whole thing and I picked my favorite part, which was, "Are you suggesting coconuts migrate?" Then when they move on and they're like pushing the cart full of dead people and saying, "Bring us your dead, bring us your dead." And then the guy brings the one that's alive. And then the guy is over his shoulder and he's saying things like, "I don't want to go in the cart. I feel fine. I feel happy." I've never related to a movie character more in my life. That's me when I'm sick. I'm like, "I'm not sick. Everything's fine." Like, I just don't want to be like this. My next one is, this is probably my favorite, one of my favorite scenes so far. When they were like going along the side and there was like, what, I forget their name, but like he was like rolling around in the filth and he's saying, "Strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony." And then when they were like rolling around and he was yelling, "Help, I'm being repressed."
That's Dennis. Everybody knows that's Dennis.
Thank you. I couldn't remember it. But the "help, help, I'm being repressed." I will never stop saying this for the rest of my life. Anytime anything slightly inconveniences me, I'm going to scream, "Help, help, I'm being repressed."
You'll be joining my wife and I. This movie, how, and that in The Simpsons is how we communicate with one another.
I love it. It's perfect. Then with the knight, I was howling. And he says, "'Tis but a scratch. A scratch your arms off." "No, it isn't." "What's that then?" "Then I've had worse." "You liar." And he has no arms and no legs. Just a flesh wound. I'll bite your legs off. And then we go from that to the monks singing whatever they're singing, chanting, and then smashing themselves in the face of the board. What doing? And then I liked it when they went back to it and the guy was trying to get the dove to carry the coconut. "How do you know she's a witch?" "She looks like one." "Okay, cool." And then when he says, "She turned me into a newt." And the guy says, "A newt?" And then he like stares at him for like 10 minutes and he's like, "I got better." And then after the stupid conversation about, I was like, crying with the duck, is the witch, is what else floats? Wood. And then she must be made of wood, but she has to be the same weight as a duck. I was like, what's happening? And then they're walking away and King Arthur says, "Who are you so wise in the ways of science?" It went from just the two of them doing the to like all of them together. They were all like, that's crazy. And then when they got to Camelot and then all the crazy, like they showed all the crazy stuff about Camelot. He said, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot. It's a silly place. And then God came down in the cloud and I couldn't even function enough to write down anything because God was in the cloud with just the moving mouse. Then came the French castle, which I had to pause and cry about because he said several things. He said, "Go and boil your bottoms, sons of a silly person. And I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries." And then they started throwing another cow. The cow came. And then after the cow came every other animal. That's so funny. And then the Trojan bunny. And then I got to, there's the entire, I just wrote the entirety of Castle Anthrax because I wasn't sure what in that I could wrote. And then I got to, "We are the knights who say nay."
Me.
As far as I got. So.
Did you procure a shrubbery?
A little picket fence?
Nope. That's as far as I got.
So you didn't get to the very big fangs?
Not yet.
Look at the bones.
As soon as we're done here, I'm just going to hit play because it's still up on my computer screen over here.
After this movie, I can never look at my rabbit again the same.
So that now feel free. No one's stealing my thunder. We can quote away.
Jason, feel like
you were released.
Go Jason.
It's just, the movie is a series of sketches, right? So it's really hard to talk about the movie without talking about the quotes from the movie, because that's all anybody really remembers. Because as we've found out there is no plot that can be summed up. Knights go on quests for Grail, do other things instead. You want to talk about brave Sir Robin's running away. It's just, oh, so intensely quotable. Holy hand grenades of Antioch. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to just repeat the quotes, but it's just, it's so hard to talk about without talking about those little scenes and saying some of those little things.
You can, now that she's done her quotes, we can quote and talk about scenes, because that's all there is to talk about. I must say, I wish there was more music. I just love when they would break in, whether it's the monks hitting themselves or the, what goes on, the silliness of Camelot.
They were really the prince who has to marry the princess and sends the arrow. Oh, no, you don't.
That's a fun scene. The French scene where he does say, yeah. I fought in your general. That actual was one of the things the British government film industry wanted to remove. They wanted them to remove that particular line for children, but they won the battle on that one.
Thank goodness.
And it's actually one of the most well-known quotes from the movie. Yeah.
I'm going to say Jason is going to turn his light off on this one.
I've got it right here. I'm holding the light.
I can stand it by the vignette. I can stand it by the lines. The little jokes are funny. I did not like watching the movie. I've never seen it before, and I will never watch it again because I did not enjoy having no plot.
This gets the rare turnaround.
Oh. I believe the word he used was unforgivable.
I'm gonna jump in here, Richard Lau, because you're not alone, because it is an acquired taste. Monty Python's humor is not for everybody, and it's never been for everybody. It's their own thing, and you either go with it or you don't, and that's just the way it is with them. It's like, you know, it's like almost all comedy. It's an acquired taste, and I actually like The Life of Brian better than better than this movie. This movie is more well-known and more quoted, probably. But I love to pieces The Life of Brian, and I will quote that movie as much randomly in my head or out loud as is appropriate. But most people won't pick those quotes up. Most people know this one more for whatever reason. I think Life of Brian is a little more charged because of its topic.
I will admit that when I started watching it yesterday, like I was on Netflix and it was like, do you want to start where you left off? Because I think we'd watched 45 minutes of it and then we're like, okay, let's do something else. Because it is a movie of vignettes and you can just put it on for 20 minutes and laugh really hard and then stop it and walk away. And it's not like a movie like Lord of the Rings or a Harry Potter film where you feel like you have to get to the end because there's really no ending to it.
End.
You can just enjoy little scenes or you can just look up bits and watch them on YouTube, which I did again today because we were talking about the movie. Because they're funny, but it is a lot to sit through. I'll admit that.
To me, it's the words. It's how they, it's like you listen, this is not Shakespeare, of course. You listen to Shakespeare, you watch Shakespeare and the flow of the words and the meaning and all this. That's how I am about Monty Python. Again, I grew up with them. I watched everything that they did. I listened. I remember having cassette tapes of Monty Python and knowing them word for word for word. And when I met my husband 20 years ago now, he knew Monty Python word for word, not just quotes, bit after sketch. So to me, those vignettes are just little vignettes and they don't fit together, but it's like it's non-Shakespeare. It's how they flow. Whatever that no punchline, weird Monty Python is, I am not educated enough to know what that is, but I love it.
And sometimes the randomness is hysterical.
And to be fair, like I said, the little vignettes in and of themselves, I found them entertaining and humorous. And I loved the jokes. I thought they were pretty clever. The coconuts, the no horses was funny. I fart in your general direction. 'Tis but a scratch. She looks like a witch. individually, I go, okay, that was pretty clever. I like that. That was pretty good. I like that. But I think it was just an hour and a half of one thing after another with no direction. That's where I went, like, five minutes, I can watch one scene, fine. But I, all in one sitting, I did not enjoy it.
It's, and that's their thing. They came from the sketch comedy. And my absolute, and I'm like I said, Life of Brian, and have long enjoyed this one too. And also have not always watched the whole thing. And it is vignettes. I agree with all of them. But one of my favorite Monty Python vignettes is probably one of their most favorite ones, of course, is the Dead Parrot skit. And that's a perfect example of their comedy in its best form. That is what they do best right there. And if you haven't seen the Monty Python parrot sketch, you need to look it up. It is absolutely hysterical.
It's brilliant.
That one, it is.
He was alive when you bought him.
He's pushing up the daisies. That one, just every time I could watch that over and over. And I think they actually built a giant parrot in a park in London, I believe, to honor Monty Python. It was a bunch of years ago. There was like a giant dead parrot in the middle of a park in the UK to honor Monty Python. So it's that is a very good example of what they are really good at and what they were trying to do here in this movie and in Life of Brian to a degree too. Although I think Life of Brian had a more of a story. It was Jesus.
Absolutely. So, can I say something that may make everyone turn their lights off on me?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to go there.
We could all be farting in your general direction if you're not.
I'm prepared for it. I immediately liked it because it reminded me a lot of Your Highness.
Why am I not surprised? I am not surprised.
Obviously they're very different, but it's the stupidity. It's the same stupidity that makes me laugh, like, until tears come out. And the questing, obviously. The questing.
That's the questing.
Monty Python has been so influential. Without Monty Python, there is no Saturday Night Live. The movie I originally wanted to do, Anchorman, which was not a witch movie at all, so we really couldn't do it, is a lot like this in that it has no real plot. It's just a little series of bits and things. The Pythons have their fingers in so much of modern comedy. It's hard to watch a funny movie and not be reminded of something from Monty Python.
And I also, as a kid, I loved PBS. And they would play the Monty Python, was it the Flying Circus or
Flying
something?
Circus.
And I remember I would watch a little bit of it here and there. And I found the humor to be quite entertaining. And I enjoyed it as a kid. Maybe my acquired taste has reverted. I don't know.
Yes, they did have an influence of comedy because you do have the sketch comedy, like you said, with Saturday Night Live. But it is, again, a British-style humor, which not everybody here in the U.S. might pick up on or enjoy as much as in, because there's a distinct sensibility to British humor, which is wry and dry, and does it. There's a lot of other shows that use it, and I haven't watched them. I think someone said Fawlty Towers, and what's the more recent one? I can't think of the name of it right now, but it is a distinct kind of humor. And I know a lot of people that don't like it, that just don't think it's funny. Even in bits and pieces, they don't think it's funny. They don't think the parrot sketch is funny. And then I just look at them and just...
Kind of people who like Cars, the movie Cars.
Hey, I like... you mean the animation movie Cars? I like the animation movie Cars.
Turn your light off.
Wait, I gotta turn my light off.
No, I'm gonna have to send you, Jason, all these little lights you can turn on and off.
We're gonna have to.
It's great for expressing displeasure.
I'm gonna turn this light on and then immediately off, Jason. Rude.
I second that.
I do have a confession to make, though. The first time I saw this movie, I did not like it. I was a very serious teenager. And we watched it in AP English class. And I was obsessed with Arthurian myth. We'd taken our AP exam, so we had nothing to do for 2 weeks. And I was very serious about my love of King Arthur. And I could not tolerate a spoof of King Arthur. So I put my nose down, or up. Perhaps I put my nose up at Monty Python and the Holy Grail, thinking that it was too lowbrow and stupid for me. And then 6 months later, once I got to college, had a beer and a girlfriend, I developed a sense of humor and fell in love with the movie.
That's my problem. Maybe that's my problem is now I'm a very serious teenager without a girlfriend.
That's it. I think that's solved it. I want to look. I also want to comment on everybody. All these great comments we're getting in the chat room. And Goose is saying, as an Arthurian legend aficionado, feel the movie is hilarious. And lower down, we missed that one about how she could not get on towns. I couldn't believe the good detail that they really did do. Yes, they're spoofing it, but oh yeah, that's that night. Oh yeah, that's that night. Thank you guys for all these quotings in here. I must say that I grew up watching it from when I was a kid, but there was a bunch of middle years that I might have been high watching it. It's a really good movie if you're high. Time I watched it completely straight. Me and the goat, and we, Black Phillip, watched it. But there's two different movies there, and they're both funny.
Even if I had tried that, I would have probably died. I would have ended up in the hospital.
I think sometime in college, though, I remember walking with a friend of mine across campus, and he said, you know what, Heather, there are two types of people in the world, those who get Monty Python and those who don't, and never the two shall mix. And I'll never forget that because I thought it was so funny. And at the time, because really knowing the quote, you know, was like, it was like you're in the in crowd. Like someone would you're in a social thing and someone would say a quote and then people would laugh. And then you knew the people that didn't laugh had no clue, hadn't seen the movie. And it was like one of those things. Definitely, I think one of our producers said the same thing in their experience as well. And so it really becomes that. Of course, it becomes a litmus test for certain crowds, probably. And I'm sure those people that don't watch it probably would laugh at us liking it as well. I'm sure
I fell in your general direction.
Exactly. They're the French ones in the... Anyway, so it was in my crowds anyway, in my theater crowds in college, and definitely everybody had watched this movie and people would quote it offhand. And I have been quoting it here and there. My kids knew how to quote it and knew the quotes before they ever watched the movie. So they recognized the quotes, even if they didn't know what movie it came from. We have the same problem with the movie Airplane, but that's a whole
other Airplane.
I do too.
Love Airplane.
I was always a bigger fan of Airplane too.
I've never seen it. I'm not. Okay, wait a minute. Where's the light? Jason, you're pushing yourself this time.
I felt like I could get away with anything tonight. That's why.
Woo! Yeah, but Airplane is one of those quotable movies, too. And between that one and Monty Python, it could wear you out all day. We could have half the day being just quotes from those two movies in this house.
We could. I loved it. From Airplane, the little kid who played the little kid in Airplane was a friend of mine. I was top of the world because that was a friend of mine, the little kid from Airplane.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to reserve quotes because immediately they start flooding my brain. Richard Lale probably the same quote in his head right now.
That's how I feel hearing Jason mention Anchorman, because Anchorman, Step Brothers, those were the ones that Borat. Unfortunately, but Borat, there was no words that were my own because I just spoke in movie quotes of those movies.
That's true.
Off topic, I am going to go into Borat for a 30-second little diatribe here. That is a very much acquired taste, and I do not like Borat, but only more for personal reasons. So on a personal note, I happen to have started playing Freddie Mercury, and I grew out a mustache, and I had gone from people going, wow, you're really beautiful. I had blonde hair, and then I had the mustache. And then I started playing Freddie Mercury, like on the stage and in Vegas. And I went from people going, wow, you're cute, you're beautiful, to they would come up to me and say, my name is Borat.
Don't, because I'm going to start.
So on a very personal level, on my very last nerve.
So
I've gotten over it 20 years later.
When I say that my wife and I talk in these quotes, we were driving somewhere and this group had arranged for us to be taken by a different, like by a driver. She was going to the same place. We were going to hitch a ride with her. And we found out the next day that she thought we were the snobbiest people in the world because apparently we probably talked in our movie quotes, Simpsons quotes language, and she couldn't find a way into that. It wasn't like it was mean. It's just how we talk to each other by quoting these movies and stuff. Like when, you know, Anchorman, when Ari's like, your hair looks stupid. That's a line from the movie. And we're just pretending to fight with each other. But that's how we communicate. And people think that we're snobs because of it, which is very sad.
Very nice.
See, I saw what you did there, Courtney.
Yeah, very nice.
I had to. It was like a compulsion. It had to come out because Richard Bell did it.
And that's what all of these movies we're talking about are. They create these compulsions. You just have to say it. You can't not. There's just these places where, you know, you just are sitting there and it's probably Jason and his wife are constantly because they're feeding off of each other. You just have to say these things and you can't stop yourself. And then you find yourself in an awkward situation. Possibly.
Okay, so speaking of like the compulsion, Jason quoted Anchorman. I've been sitting here this whole time since he said the word Anchorman with the man punted Baxter.
Baxter, you don't speak Spanish?
I'm not impressed. I'm impressed. I can't. It's so hard because I can't focus on anything else unless they come out.
Yeah.
That's what makes these movies my favorite. That's why. As much as you don't want me to say it, Your Highness, I love Your Highness, because that's what I felt that way about that movie too. But that's what makes me love quotes so much, because they just become part of my regular speech and I have no thoughts that are my own.
I loved the scene. I have to admit, I love the quote, the witch scene. Yes, the Tis a Scratch. The one that actually made me chuckle the most was the one where the prince in the tower shoots the arrow and it hits the assistant. I don't remember his name, but it hits the assistant and he's mortally wounded. Oh, I'm not mortally wounded. They've killed my assistant. No, I'm not dead. Okay, they've mortally wounded. No, I think I'm fine, actually.
Okay, I'll just stay here.
I did laugh at that one. I did laugh at that.
Oh my God. I didn't even notice. I thought it was the goat. I didn't notice.
The goat turned into a cat.
Wonder Witch.
She's a cat. This is Gracie.
Hi, Gracie.
She was attacking bottom side from under the chair. So I had to pick her up because it hurt. So she had to replace Black Billet.
Oh, he is still there. I thought maybe you had turned your goat into a cat.
I was working on that. We're working on that, but no.
She's a witch.
Now do a newt.
Now she's my
witch.
Looks like a witch.
A very modern witch.
All right. You know that
what
double.
Not this movie.
You were saying? I was going to say, when we talk about movie TV quotes, there's a show called Letterkenny that we quote a lot now, too. And on that show, every time somebody says, to be fair, all the characters start going, to be fair. And now we do that with strangers when we're out and about and they look at us like we're crazy, or we'll see somebody else go, yeah, like doing it with us. So it is our new litmus test for people is how to be fair. And I've done it on this show, which makes me feel like a jerk because I don't think that the rest of you watch Letterkenny. But if I ever do that, it's because of that show, because we are creatures of quotes.
Quotes. I like that. I have a question, though, because we're not recently out of Courtney's the youngest here, but not recently out of college. Do college students still know Monty Python, or is that?
I just turned 19. So, yes, they do.
My older two children who are in college both have watched it multiple times. And I don't know if that's because and not with me. I didn't make them watch it. They watched it on their own. And they both, and they both liked it. They both watched it with friends in college. Yeah.
Okay. So it's still
very much. And you know, the one thing that they did talk about I read some reading on it today. And one of the things was talking about one of the scenes that was cut was that there was not only going to be a black knight, but there was also going to be a vignette with a pink knight. And the pink knight wasn't going to let them pass because unless he kissed him, unless the king kissed the knight. Now, and I don't know how they had it written or developed. Apparently, it was cut because they felt like at the time they were trying to challenge the fears of homosexuality and confront that head on like that with this scene. But they decided to cut it. I can't remember why. And it said that they were happy after because this is one of the scenes that if it was in there today, it wouldn't have worked as well. People would have been like, huh, what's going on? It might have seemed like it was mocking the queer culture rather than actually trying to confront homophobia. So they are glad that they actually cut that scene. So I'm trying to figure out where it would have been, but it was actually going to mirror the Black Knight. It's going to be the same scene, but I guess later? I don't know. So
well,
I thought
it's not
that was
like you have to worry about where you put it into the narrative.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, Jason. Where would have it worked? What other bridge would we have had to cross? Yeah, no, it could have been anywhere. Maybe after the fang. We haven't even talked about the rabbit scene. And
no, let's talk about the rabbit scene.
Right. The bones. The rabbit flies up and there's blood and there's bone. That's all I can say about it. Moving on. That scene just always makes me laugh. Sorry.
The second part of that scene is where they enter the cave that the rabbit's been protecting after using the holy hand grenade of Antioch. And the number of the counting shall be 3, which is one of my favorite parts. But there's a story I want to tell that is a real life story of that inscription on the cave wall. So in the movie, they're trying to find the grail, and it's like, it's written maybe by Joseph of Arimathea or something like that. This was a point, like, the year before my wife and I got married, we lived together, and we were fighting a lot. And we were, like, it was just traumatic, and we had a bunch of roommates, and we lived in different rooms, and everybody in our house, because it was one of those big college houses, knew what was going on, right, that we were not getting along. And my brother lived with me. I want you to realize that my brother's just 1 year younger than me, which is really important for this story. So we'd been fighting and not getting along. And then the next morning I go downstairs and there's this letter that's written and it's taped to my door. It's like, "Dear Jason and Ari, I can't handle you two fighting anymore. It's like mom and dad fighting all over again. I hope that you two will get back together and everything will." This is a letter my brother wrote me at like 2 or 3 in the morning, probably while stoned and very drunk. And it really ended with, and all we could think of was Monty Python. And to my brother's credit, we read that letter together and laughed together for the first time in several weeks. But all I could think of at the time was him like reading it, like being really proud of himself, and then seeing that it ends with him going, "Yeah, nailed it."
That's amazing.
That's
a great story.
He doesn't watch the show, so I can tell that story.
I have to admit that I loved, from someone who was raised reading the Bible day and night, that whole scene of the number shall be 3. Thou shalt count to 3, not to 4, and not to 2, unless you after therefore count to 3, and not the soul, and skip a bit there, brother. That was clever. That was very much like the passages of so-and-so beget so, and so-and-so beget so, and very good. That was clever.
I'll also say that I hadn't seen the movie in a while, and I was surprised by how good it looked. Because it got a remaster, you know, I think maybe 10 years ago now. But when you reach a certain age, that just seems like yesterday. Because I grew up watching it on grainy VHS tapes. And it was really dark and it was blurry and it was hard to see. And being able to watch it today, the costumes are terrific. And you get to see that depressing Scottish countryside where it's gray all the time and dark. And I think that adds a lot of character to the movie. It makes it even a little bit more absurd.
Yeah, I loved this countryside. I loved that it was on location in Scotland. That was just gorgeous.
I saw one little note in one article that said that when they went, they got all the money and they got out there on their first day to film, all excited. Nobody had ever done this before. They got there and the camera did not work. So there they were set up. If you've ever been on a film set and you know how much time it takes and what goes into actually getting there, getting everything set up, getting the people there, the cast, this crew, and then going, we got a problem. I was like, oh my goodness, that's a great way to start the movie. So that's a great comedy of errors right there to start a comedy of a sketch comedy movie like this.
And what's even funnier is a big crew, a cast, they're on the countryside and they have a camera.
Right. That's what one camera.
A camera, B camera, C camera. Okay. No.
One camera. They had one camera.
I
can't remember if it was just the sound that didn't work. And so they couldn't record the sound or if it was both. I can't remember what the article said right now, but it wasn't working. So they couldn't film. And then they had to go find a camera.
I also love the little animations in between. When they were doing the trumpets and then all of a sudden they were trumpeting at their butts. I screamed. And then when the monks were jumping off the thing and then the one monk jumped too far and then got flipped over to the other lady and then was upside down with his butt out. There were so many cartoon butts and I was excited by everyone.
That's all Terry Gilliam too.
Very Monty Python.
Yeah, that's what he was brought in to do. He's the one American in the cast, Terry Gilliam.
If you don't know Monty Python, Courtney, you're going to have to look at some of the old different Monty Python.
Yeah.
Tunes. Exactly.
Watch Life of Brian. It is brilliant. It's brilliant.
It's Easter. It's mandatory Easter watching.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to because I loved this very much. This is so my humor.
All right. I think we've discussed the lack of plot line and I think all we're waiting for is a movie moment. Ex Jason Nancy. Oh, light back on.
Oh, there he is.
All right. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelled of elderberries. You can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you. Strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate of the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony. I got better. I'm not dead. None shall pass. 'Tis but a scratch. The scratch, your arm's off. No, it isn't. What's that then? Had worse. Just a flesh wound. What are you going to do? Bleed on me? Monty Python and the Holy Grail is the most intensely quotable movie in the history of cinema. And every time they bang those damn coconuts together, I can't help but laugh. Is there anything funnier than this movie? Most likely not. But what if I told you that Holy Grail was actually a documentary starring a group of rogue Renaissance fair actors on some really bad acid and that the film documents over 24 murders? That's what drugs will do to you, kids. Make you dress up like a medieval knight and kill people. A flesh wound? Not quite. The Black Knight lost more than 4 appendages that day. He also lost over 2 gallons of blood. And most importantly, his life. We howl in laughter, but an innocent Renaissance fair performer dies in that scene. And due to having glued his helmet onto his head, he's never been identified. Though unintended, Holy Grail is also a testament to the horrible effects of drugs and alcohol. Did you know that when you are high, even the sweetest, kindest animal can turn into a blood-sucking killer? A person has to take a lot of drugs to upset a rabbit so much that it will kill a man. But that's what those Monty Python idiots did while making their movie. And let's not forget the paranoia that can set in with rampant drug use, causing people to refuse innocent women witchcraft and then believe that those women went the same amount as a duck. And never forget that drugs can lead to strange obsessions, like an overwhelming need for a shrubbery. There's a reason the cops show up on and off in this movie. They're attempting to take down a murderous English drug cartel before they can do even more damage.
Very good.
the anger of rabbits so much and kills me. Oh, Jason. You make me cry in one way or another, like every 3 weeks.
Oh, that is brilliant, David.
There is a weirdness to the movie, though, like the modern characters running through it. And every time I watch, I can't help but think that there are just these people like running around a forest pretending they're King Arthur or whatever. Right. And the whole movie is just a parody of crazy people running around thinking that they're the Knights of the Round Table. And that's why it ends like it does.
I always forget the scenes with the modern people in them. I always am like, oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. It's that plotless thing going on again.
And it just flashes in and flashes out. No explanations.
There's the historian for a couple of scenes where he's talking about the history of thing. And then he's gone. And then it's back to them just fooling around. And it is so weird. And I honestly think that you could interpret it in very odd ways because of all that, which I guess I just did.
And I think that would be perfectly fine. And I think the Monty Python crew would probably enjoy that as well.
Yes.
I think that's the point of it.
Yeah, I think that's the point of it. And Carl, yes, we all have the same goat. This is Black Phillip. We like to watch movies, delicious. You can have them too.
Though I will say that mine have human eyes. Look at that. Mine have different eyes and else. Everybody else has normal goat eyes, and mine have human eyes.
But mine has a butthole. Yours has a butthole. Mine has
Courtney,
one eye.
Courtney still needs surgery.
Courtney, send it down to me so I can fix him.
I can't be without Black Phillip. Plus, his butthole is useful for when I do butthole magic, which I haven't done yet because I'm a terrible witch.
Whoa.
Poor Black Phillip.
Hear it.
Maybe. It'll be good for him. He'll love it. And then he can be sewn up. But also, his wires are all over the place. He's supposed to have, like, posable legs. You can see one sticking out over here.
Courtney, I can tell you, as someone who once dressed in drag, that underwire is a killer every time.
Yeah, you're telling me. I won't wear it anymore. But he likes it. Because it makes him be able to keep his legs closed, which they can't be now.
That is so important. Keeping his legs closed.
That's when your butt is so big. Such a big butt. TMI.
Oh, my God, Patty. Look at his butt.
You need some power panties.
He needs a thong.
I feel like I need to cover my Black Phillip's eyes. So
listen, there is nothing wrong with earning a dollar this way. To a Black Phillip.
My Black Phillip's very curious.
My Black Phillip eyes, this is one reason I love my husband. He fixes everything wrong. I had a little witch statue, a little witch riding a broom, a little tchotchke thing, and it was so cute. And the broom broke. And he fixed it for me, and she's riding the broom the wrong way. Now, it looks nasty all of a sudden. And it is still solid and gliding. Our 20 years together, the last thing was Black Phillip's eye was eaten out of by some little dachshund. You fix it for me. One goes up, one goes down. No comprehension. No awareness. That's why I love him.
Perfect.
Oh yes, write a song, Carl Franklin. The Black Goat Cult.
Make sure you talk about mine as the only one with a butthole in the song.
And Courtney's goat's butthole is split wide open.
Yes, yep. Perfect.
Courtney, you don't have a dog, do you?
No, it just split by itself because first it was a small, like where his. It was just like this little butthole part. That's why I used to call it a butthole. And then everything went to where?
Probably not a doll.
He's had a whole C-section, it looks like.
Because he used to stand like this. Where's his butt? He used to stand like this. And now his legs just go out like this because he's promiscuous and he likes it that way. I don't know.
I will never let that happen to you.
Anyway.
As I said, you send him down here. I will fix his wire, underwire, and I will take care of his butthole.
Okay, but here's the deal. If he's going to be sewn on his butthole, then he needs an actual butthole forever so I can remember it.
We can talk about it. Maybe horns. We can include some horns as well and stuff. Okay.
This is not Cats. I mean, this is not King.
Stop. I need the butthole cut of Cats the Musical.
And yet we digress. Is it time to vote?
Oh, I think so.
It's time to vote.
Monty Python on the Holy Grail. Wands up, wands down. Now, you guys out there, you've been guys so good at talking.
Rail.
Wands. Robert Hicks. Pushing it. Oh, now Rich Little. Favorite goat. That's good. Wands up, wands up. Come on, everybody, vote away. Two wands up for John. Yay. Super up for Lisa. Or up. Well, sideways.
I didn't used to get fireworks.
Oh, up for Haley. Okay. Mary Jane, wands up. All right. So we have more wands up than down. We have, but you have watching. You have to watch the rest of it, Courtney.
I immediately after we're done here. It's happening.
And then you have to text me the whole time you're watching it.
I will text you the whole script. I'll text you the whole script.
All right. What are we watching next week? Do we know?
We are watching The Pale Blue Eye.
The Pale Blue. I have no idea what that is.
2022, 2023. It's a recent movie and it's got a little magic in it.
It's on Netflix for anyone. It's a Netflix original movie.
Pale Blue Eye on Netflix. Okay. Does anybody have anything coming up? We have just a couple of minutes left.
I think tomorrow's a special day that we might want to mention again.
Oh yeah.
One thing, tomorrow is Doreen Valiente's birthday, the mother of modern witchcraft who wrote The Charge of the Goddess. Once in a month, better be when the moon is full, there ye shall assemble in some secret place and adore the spirit of me, who is queen of all the witches. Her birthday is January 4th. And
someone else's.
And someone else's January 4th. So happy birthday. I really want to sing to Jason, but we've been.
I know we can't.
No, it was awful. We'll just say happy birthday because we don't want to sing out the dirge. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Jason.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Wait, I've got it. Happy birthday from the crew. Da 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 da. Something for you.
They say it's your birthday.
Don't do that one.
That could get us in big trouble.
That's why we only did half a line to that. Anyway, does anybody have any coming up in the next couple weeks? I'm going to be in Virginia. I'm going to be at Hanover Tavern Paracon in Virginia. Lots of cool kids are coming. Rob Thompson, who's on here tonight, he's going to be there. We're going to be doing a mediumship gallery together. All sorts of cool kids. So if you're anywhere near there or want to or can be, join us. It's all on my social media. It's on my website. Anybody else traveling in January?
2 weeks from tonight, I'm going to be in LA and I'm going to get to hang out with Patty and I'm going to get to hang out with our producers, Rob and Christine. So super excited about that. But
I'm so jealous.
I know. West is the best.
West is the best. West is the best. All right. Nobody else. Okay.
Well, I have something. So to plug University of Magicus, I'm at University of Magicus, of course. I'll be teaching there. I do teach there. You teach there. We have a lot of teachers, a lot of different things. So I'll be there. And then also, if you happen to be in New Orleans, coming up the 13th of February is, in fact, Mardi Gras. And then the 14th is Valentine's Day. And come to New Orleans, get a reading from me. I will be naked. Just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, now I'm making some plans, baby.
Naked in New Orleans. Everybody join. We're all going.
I'm booking my flight.
Get on that room.
Speaking of Valentine's, everything just fell off my desk. Speaking of Valentine's, LA Valentine's, non-Valentine's ball at the Mayan is February 18th, 19th weekend. All sorts. Look at you, Jason. You're the only one who can make that happen.
Yeah. None of it happens.
Nope.
Magic.
Also, speaking of Valentine's Day, our annual anti-Valentine's Day tour in Salem is coming up. Stories of Love Gone Wrong in Salem, the best way to celebrate the worst holiday. So the tickets are on sale now at SalemGhostTours.com.
Okay, so go to Salem, go to New Orleans, go to Los Angeles, see Jason, see me, see Heather, see Richard Leal, see Courtney. Get a goat, get a cat, take the cat. It is that time. So do we neat or do we cackle?
I feel like we should try.
Neat and try. I'm ready. You neat and trot. Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Neat.
Oh, not pride to say me.